There's something that happens to me when I cross the Hood Canal Bridge and enter the Olympic Peninsula. It's a feeling different from that of entering the Cascades, which are gorgeous and an inspiring mountain range, no doubt. Maybe because the Olympic Peninsula is the site of an epic dam removal project, which is restoring to a pristine condition one of the most legendary salmon-bearing rivers in the world. Maybe it's because some of the cleanest air in the world can be found here, or the biomass per acre unique. Perhaps it's the unique biological diversity with numerous endemic species of plants and animals, or its prodigious glacier system, the third largest in the contiguous United States. It might be that when I moved to Seattle in 1988, our view from West Queen Anne Hill was the brothers, or the fact that in the year 2000 I was lost in these mountains and had to be rescued by military helicopter, or that in 1995 I had an epic backpacking trip during which, at the top of a mountain overlooking the pristine Boulder Creek watershed, I read the words of poet Michael McClure, "More alive than I ought to be," and I felt like I understood what he was getting at. The words and setting, such a perfect combination. Poet and nature writer Tim McNulty lives in these mountains, and he lives with these mountains. Read the fourth edition of Olympic National Park, A Natural History, and you will see 100 or more reasons why this corner of the world is unique and why it deserves its status as a UN World Heritage Site. Tim has lived here since 1991 with his wife Mary, and we sit at his dinner table to discuss his book, this remarkable part of the world, and perhaps some of his poems about his experience living in and with these mountains. Tim, so grateful for your world-class hospitality, for the visit to Han Shan Point yesterday, and for all your work on communicating the beauty of this place.
Thank you. More than welcome. It's exciting to have you both here.
The first question I was going to ask is, how did you end up here? But I saw pictures of your grandfather's village in Italy and the scenery there, and I thought, it's in his genetics. It's very simple.
That's one of the current theories. During college, I came west. You know, it was the late 60s, and everybody was reading Jack Kerouac and dreaming about California. While out here, I traveled around, hitchhiked a bit, visited some wild places, some places I had encountered in poems previously. By Gary Snyder, by Kenneth Rexroth, by Robinson Jeffers, and found my way to the Northwest, and it really clicked for me. I decided that when I finished school, the draft was still on. It was, you know, the 60s. When I finished college, I wanted to come out here, find a beautiful place, and write. Following finishing up my degree, I traveled around for the better part of a year, visiting a lot of the wild places, from the Southwest deserts, Northern Rockies, all the way up the coast into British Columbia, Canadian Rockies. And the Olympic Peninsula was the one. It just reached out and grabbed me. So settled here in 1972, trying to figure out what to do, how to make it, and here still.
Yeah. You have been active in preserving more of this peninsula by helping the effort to create wilderness areas so that more of the peninsula would be free from the ravages of casino capitalism.
Well said.
Or civilization, as your friend Tom Jay would say. Tell us about that effort.
I kind of stumbled into it. I thought coming here I'd be in a remote and wild and beautiful place and can focus on poetry and familiarizing myself with natural history, learning what I could, that anti-war politics and engagement was behind me, part of my, you know, college years. However, I happened to land out at the Northwest Coast, Shy Shy Beach, Point of Arches area. Found out that Olympic National Park did not extend that far north, that it was all owned by timber companies, and the clear cuts were pressing in from the Lake Ozette Basin. I met a photographer friend, Stephen Johnson, who was engaged in an effort to try to save Shy Shy, Point of the Arches, as was poet Robert Sund, an important influence on me in those years. And I just kind of slipped into it. I knew how to write a letter. I knew how to write articles. My English, otherwise useless English degree, kicked in. And started working with a couple of local organizations to preserve Shy Shy Beach, Point of the Arches, the east shore of Lake Ozette. That campaign went remarkably quickly. It was a success. By 1976, Congress passed legislation to include those areas in Olympic National Park, and I thought, fantastic. I was hooked. I was in.
This is easy.
This is easy, he thought.
But then the wilderness areas around the that ring the park, essentially, or part of the park.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, that was kind of the next big campaign, the next big step. By that time, I was planting trees, making my living, working on a little kind of cooperative tree planting company, met some lifelong friends: Jerry Gorsline, Mike O'Connor, Finn Wilcox, and others, and we got interested in these beautiful wild areas in the high country of Olympic National Forest that were outside the park and that were subject to being logged. In fact, roads were being pushed up wilderness valleys, clear cuts on really steep slopes that we were then being contracted to go plant. So we kind of launched into putting together a wilderness proposal and trying to get a number of organizations to back those proposals. We were successful. That turned into a 10-year campaign. That bill, the Washington Wilderness Bill, didn't pass until 1984. So that was a little bit more of a baptism by hard work and persistence and writing and speaking and traveling around and getting into the conflict of it a little bit more.
These guys you just mentioned, Jerry Gorsline, Finn Wilcox, and others, Michael Daly.
Michael Daly, Tom Jay.
Tom Jay. This was the first real thrust of bioregional thought in this part of the world. And you were influenced by the notion of bioregionalism, which was beginning back then.
Very much so. Jerry, in particular, had worked with the Planetrum Foundation out of the Bay Area. And he and Freeman House had just finished doing a project they called North Pacific Rim Alive, which not only focused on the northwest coast, coastal bioregion, but around the Bering Strait and the Aleutian Islands and down into Japan. It was a redefining of our place, and it was revelatory to me. And I suddenly saw how this lovely little mountain range peninsula that I was falling in love with fit in to this larger cultural and ecological region. It was sheer excitement. Jerry also was among all of us very tuned into current ecological research, and he was bringing us the research papers out of the H.J. Andrews Experimental Forest Service, Jerry Franklin's early work on old growth forests, Freeman House very much interested in the first work on wild salmon and salmon habitats. And so it was a bit of a crash course in that case, not only for our region, but the whole ethic of bioregional identity.
Mm-hmm. Near the end of the book, page 232, I think it is, you talk about from Yakutat Bay, Alaska, to Cape Mendocino, California, and this is the area you cite of Northwest Coast culture. It's also the length of the Cascadia bioregion.
Kind of is, isn't it?
It is. Intentional, yes?
Yeah, very much so.
How does that tie up with coast culture and the actual geography, or I should say geology, that informs bioregionalism?
Well, you know, that is a large area. It breaks down, to me, it continues to break down into smaller and smaller components, leading to the basic unit of the watershed. Living on the peninsula here, I always kind of expanded that watershed component into the peninsula, this dozen watersheds that form a unified whole. But when you look at the larger picture, you look at, you know, where the coniferous forest, coastal coniferous forest biome extends, where the greatest influence of Northeast Pacific Ocean marine influence, the landscape that was shaped by glaciation, and perhaps most importantly, where salmon can get to and where salmon spawn. And I think maybe it was Tim Egan who said, you know, the Northwest is any place a salmon can get to. Right. All those factors kind of, you know, figure into my thinking that way. There's a unified cultural presence as well.
Right.
American cultural presence.